Tommy McNeil. China says it's imposing tariffs on $60 billion worth of imports from the United States, retaliating after U.S. President Trump boosted taxes on $200 billion worth of Chinese goods sent to the United States and moved to impose duties on another $300 billion of Chinese exports. Chinese Finance Ministry said Monday that its new 5% to 25% tax would be imposed June 1st and affects 5,140 U.S. products exported to China. Beijing said its response was targeting U.S. unilateralism and trade protectionism. Meanwhile, President Trump says his administration will take steps to help farmers affected by the trade standoff.
We're going to take the highest year, the biggest purchase that China has ever made with our farmers, which is about $15 billion, and do something reciprocal to our farmers so our farmers can do well.
The president has threatened to extend tariffs to an additional $300 billion in Chinese exports. Top officials from the European Union are calling on the United States to use maximum restraint and avoid military escalation with Iran. Federica Mogherini, the European Union's foreign policy chief, said Monday in Brussels that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo heard very clearly from them, not only from her, but also from the other ministers of EU member states, that they're living in a crucial, delicate moment where the most relevant attitude to take, the most responsible attitude to take, is, and they believe should be, that of maximum restraint and avoiding any escalation of the military side.
We still invite Iran to comply with all its nuclear commitments, and we will do our part on our side to continue to fully implement the nuclear deal.
Secretary Pompeo also discussed reported attacks on oil tankers. This is VOA News. As Edward Uranian reports for VOA, there have been sabotage attacks on the four tankers, and they're stoking fears of possible conflict with Iran.
Julian Assange was accused of rape by two.
Albanian protesters threw firebombs at the police on Monday evening, and the supporters of opposition parties gathered in the capital to ask for the resignation of the socialist Prime Minister Edi Rama in early elections. Opposition supporters marched in front of the main government buildings amid rain, but did not attempt to break the police barrier as they did on Saturday. They threw firecrackers at the prime minister's offices, however. Hours earlier, officials from the United States, the European Union, and Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe had called for restraint. The U.S. Embassy called on opposition leaders to condemn publicly the violent acts of their supporters and authorities to act with restraint. The violent actions took place during Saturday's protest and were lawful and undemocratic, according to a U.S. statement. Swedish prosecutors are saying that they are reopening the case against the WikiLeaks founder, Julian Assange. This follows a request from the lawyer of one of the alleged victims. We get more from Henry Ridgewell, reporting for VOA.
Julian Assange was accused of rape by two women following a WikiLeaks conference in Stockholm in 2011. He sought asylum in London's Ecuadorian embassy, claiming the accusations were part of a plot to have him extradited to the United States over his whistleblowing activities. Swedish prosecutors dropped the investigation in 2017. But last month, Ecuador reversed its decision to offer Assange asylum. One of the women who made the rape accusations requested the case be reopened. Assange denies the rape accusations. In a statement, WikiLeaks said the reopening of the case would allow him to clear his name. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
For the third time in less than a year, a jury has ruled the main ingredient in a popular weed killer caused cancer in its users. A San Francisco jury Monday awarded more than $2 billion to a couple in their 70s who say that glyphosate and Roundup weed killer gave them non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. The couple say that they use Roundup for 35 years. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 14th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has reportedly been charged for killing protesters.
I haven't had the information about President Bashir being charged. Inevitably, it's going to happen because that is one of the accusations leveled at him when he was in power.
Ghazi Atabani is the leader of the Reform Now party of Sudan. Zimbabwe will soon begin to compensate white commercial farmers whose land was seized in 2000. Rwanda's unregistered opposition leader denies recruiting members based on ethnicity. And South Africa's Economic Freedom Fighters Party celebrates its gains in last Tuesday's election.
The message of the economic freedom fighters to the voters of South Africa resonated with the citizens and the rest of Africa.
Godrej Gadi is the Secretary General of the EFF party. We have analysis of the violence in Burkina Faso between jihadist elements and armed groups. And Maureen Ojiambo will have a report on Kenyan women and endometriosis. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has reportedly been charged for killing anti-government protesters. The Office of Sudan's Prosecutor General said in a statement on Monday that Bashir and others have been charged for inciting and participating in the killing of demonstrators. Sudan's military removed Bashir from power on April 11 this year after 4 months of protests against his regime. Physicians for Human Rights has estimated that Sudanese security forces killed more than 60 protesters. Meanwhile, protest leaders in the Transitional Military Council reportedly agreed on Monday on the structure of a transitional administration. Ghazi Atabani is the leader of the Reform Now party in Sudan. He says he has not heard of President Bashir being charged, but that it was inevitable.
I haven't had the solid information about President Bashir being charged. He would have been charged at some point down the road because that is one of the accusations leveled at him when he was in power. I'm not sure if that has been done today. Inevitably, it's going to happen.
When they say he would have been charged, is there a civilian prosecutor or this is the military that will charge him?
I have no idea. I'm sorry, I can't give you exact information on that.
Dr. Ghazi, how many protesters do you all know at all that were killed during the protests?
Not exactly. I don't want to venture. I don't have solid figures.
We also hear that the protesters met with the military council. What was the discussion there?
Obviously, they are still discussing some of the points that would mark the beginning of the transitional period, that is the formation of the presidential council, the cabinet, and the legislative council. It seems they have made some progress in those areas. They have, I think, agreed on the percentages to be shared in the presidential council, which is the supreme body. And I guess they might have also reached agreement on a cabinet, executive council. But they haven't as yet reached a final deal. And they're stepping up the pressure from both sides. Now, we've seen the protesters staging demonstrations in the evening, and they're actually not very far from the headquarters.
When you say it seems they have reached some agreement on the percentages, what are the percentages that they're talking about?
Well, there was talk of about, at one time, 15 members of the Presidential Council or the Supreme Council, divided into two, three to the civilians and 12 for the military. This has been the opening of discussions. They may have reached this agreement, you know, 3 plus 12 this afternoon, but obviously the protesters are not satisfied.
In the meantime, the protests continue, but we learned that on Monday, the Sudanese police used tear gas to disperse the protesters. Are the protests still going on?
At this moment, when we are talking, there are protests outside, and there's also tear gas being used. It's not just an ordinary night. There's some activity outside.
Dr. Ghazi, thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
Ghazi Atabani is the leader of the Reform Now party in Sudan. He was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. South Africa's Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF party, has been celebrating its gains in last Tuesday's election. The party, led by Julius Malema, almost doubled its percentage of after garnering 10.7% of the total votes cast, an increase from 6.3% 5 years ago. The ruling African National Congress Party, ANC, won first place with 58% of the vote, while the Democratic Alliance took second place with 21%. Economic Freedom Fighters General Secretary Godrej Gharde says the prospects of growth for the party are looking good.
The message of the Economic Freedom Fighters to the voters of South Africa resonated with the citizens and the rest of Africa. We are an economic emancipation movement. Our people have heard the message. It is the message that makes people to vote otherwise.
Looking at how you performed, what do you think are the prospects of the EFF in the coming years?
We are the only political party in the political landscape of South Africa that registers immense growth from one election to the other. You can tell that we will actually be growing more in the upcoming elections of 2021 local government elections and 2024 in the national and provincial elections.
Despite the gains, some South Africans are saying that the ruling ANC is a force to reckon with in South African politics, and despite the slip, they are prepared to bounce back based on the performance of Cyril Ramaphosa, the current president. What is your take on that?
We cannot take it from any other party that they are actually a brand that are more established, well-known, have been there over 100 years. We are a new generation. We have to take our message to the people and explain that every generation crafts its own destiny and decides whether to betray or strive to achieve it. We have our own generational mission as the EFF, economic freedom in our lifetime. We will move from there forward. All other parties, well, they have their own issues to deal with, but it doesn't look like they have in any way a chance to recover, because you will know, as I know for a fact, that the ANC is actually going through the phenomena of all liberation movements throughout the world. They have to live for a lifespan up to a certain extent, and they definitely cease to exist at a certain point in time. And that is the trajectory of the ANC that it has embarked on.
Some of your critics are saying the EFF and its policies and what it espouses sometimes is too extreme. Had it not been that, you have been performing better than you did in the recently ended elections. What are your thoughts?
Is a militant, radical, anti-imperialist organization of the people that is committed in restoration of the dignity of our people. And the dignity of our people can only be restored when the land belongs to the state and not white, minority, privileged individuals. The land issue is at the center of everything in South Africa. And whether you call that to be extreme, well, that is your own pudding to eat. But as a matter of fact, we are a conquered nation which suffered a genocidal attack by the white settlers when they came to South Africa. And it cannot be said that when we rightfully claim what rightfully belongs to the people of Africa and South Africa, we can be said to be extremist or otherwise.
Godrej Gharde is the General Secretary for the South African Opposition Party, Economic Freedom Fighters. He spoke with U.S. Peter Clotty from Johannesburg. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, May 14th. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. In Rwanda, Victoire Ingabire, president of the unregistered main opposition FDU Inkingi Party, has dismissed allegations that she was caught recruiting rebel groups based on ethnicity. Several state media houses wrote that she was interested in Hutu-only members. Ingabire told the Voice of America that her lawyer is going to file a complaint against the state-controlled media houses, which she says publish false stories about her, and to ask them to correct what she calls a thick story. Eugene Uwimana has more from Kigali.
Victoire Ingabire told VOA the meeting with her party members was peaceful and that the purpose was to salute them for their support when she was in prison, as well as discuss the party's agenda. She said she's not a member of any rebel group.
I
have always said that I want to be the peaceful country. I don't belong to any terror group. Leaders could not spare me if I was conducting terror activities, but local leaders disrupted our meeting when I was sharing drinks with my members. I was just thanking my members who kept on visiting me when I was in jail. Those people came where we were and beat my assistant and bring chaos, but we let them and leave the bar. Several Rwandan media houses are reporting that on a Saturday, Ingabire drove to the northern province to chair a meeting of 22 people. Those reports say Ingabire told witnesses to recruit only ethnic Hutu because she doesn't love Tutsis. 25 years pass now after Rwanda refused to be defined on grounds of ethnicity because it led the country to the worst tragedy of the 20th century, the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. Ingabire Victoire told the VOA that her lawyer will ask those media houses to rectify the story or she might have to take them to court. I asked my lawyer to write to Ihe and Kigali today to rectify those stories. If they don't do that, we end up in court because it is too much to always tarnish someone's name. These media houses have used those people who sabotaged, led by the executive secretary of the sector we were in, and give them a voice of drawing fake news. Several Rwandan critics say they worry about stories fired by some media houses, which they call mouthpieces of the government. Mugano Gonzaga is the executive secretary of the Rwanda Journalists Association. I worry much too. Based on the stories I read nowadays, I wonder if Rwanda faces a political crisis again. Hate media can't come back again. For even some respected media houses, we read some of their stories and ask ourselves, what happened? Asking the journalists, they say we don't know where those stories come from. It is a very big problem. On 14 September 2018, President Paul Kagame commuted the prison sentence of Ingabire Victoire, who had been sentenced to 15 years. She had been convicted for inciting the masses to revolt against the government, forming armed groups to destabilize the country, and minimizing the 1994 genocide against the Tutsi. But she was already said that the charges were politically motivated. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
The first allocation of funds to compensate former white commercial farmers in Zimbabwe whose land was seized in 2000 may be hitting their accounts as early as this month. President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government announced last month that it has started processing the compensations. Ben Gilpin, director of the Commercial Farmers Union of Zimbabwe, says about 860 white farmers who applied for the compensation of $53 million in local Zimbabwe currency will be receiving payments as early as this month.
The interim relief payment is being processed at the moment. Following on from the agreement, we had initial response of around about 860 applicants. Those are being processed, and what we're trying to do now is to make sure that banking details and payment details are collated properly and will be passed on to the government in the next few days.
So when are the farmers likely to see the money in their accounts?
We anticipate within the next week, certainly before the end of the month.
You were also still negotiating with the government for the compensation of property and other things. What is the latest on that?
That process is ongoing. Certainly, we are grateful that the dialogue has been positive, and certainly the movement with regard to this interim relief is positive and well received. But it's a very small part of a bigger picture. Government itself has made a commitment going back to the president was inaugurated first, and secondly when he was re-inaugurated, has made the commitment to try and get this done quickly. That has accelerated the process in which the government itself has been doing its own evaluation. Our own professional valuers have been working hard to ensure that they can produce a valuation roll. Those two roles will be assessed independently, and I think from there we will see how close we are in order to move forward.
Lastly, we have heard reports of fresh invasions. What is happening on the farms?
I guess the situation on the ground is always likely to move backwards and forwards. There's been an ongoing land audit ongoing at the present time. You're probably aware of that. The situation with regard to individual farms on the ground, often there are people who perhaps have been given offer letters some time ago who are perhaps didn't show up with those there. And the process of dealing with those relates really to whether it is a historical issue going back to prior to November or December 2017 or subsequent to that. Yeah, there are always opportunists trying to take advantage of the present time.
Do you think any white farmers will benefit from this land audit when everything is said and done and is concluded?
Certainly, there's a lot of underutilized land in the country, and it would make a lot of sense. There's an aim of getting the country back functional and getting the economy going, that those that are interested, regardless of race and have got skills, should be able to get access to land and use it productively.
Ben Gilpin is the director of the Commercial Farmers Union of Zimbabwe. He spoke with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Gunmen in Burkina Faso attacked a Catholic church over the weekend and killed six people, including the priest. This was the second attack by armed groups on a church in less than a month. International Crisis Group's West Africa Project Director Rinaldo Dapin spoke to Ricky Stryak about the most recent attack and what the Burkina Faso government is doing to combat an increasingly violent crisis between jihadist elements and armed groups in the country.
There is now a worrying question, which is, does this set between brackets a trend? Knowing that on the 29th of April, first church, a Protestant church that time, was attacked. And, five people were killed. And now, 10 days or a bit more than 10 days after, you have a second one. That one was a Catholic church, is attacked. So is it a trend that we are witnessing? Well, this is a question to be asked.
This is relatively new, correct? The attack specifically on churches?
Yeah. I share the concern of the head of the opposition in Burkina, Zéphirin Diabré, who said very rightly that it was made to create division within the Burkinabe society. In a society that was relatively, religious balance was relatively good and fine.
How is the Burkina Faso government, how do they need to improve their reaction to it? The intelligence services we've spoken about before, you know, have they made advances this year at all?
Well, first of all, the reaction of the Burkinabe government and authorities in terms of security is very difficult to read because, for instance, they conducted an operation in the eastern part of the country, but the result on the operation itself is kept absolutely secret. So it's very difficult to, base any judgment on serious ground because there is a blackout of information around this operation. So you don't know what the results are. Obviously, attacks are still going on, and we don't have confirmation yet of this, but apparently they are going, or they started to launch a massive operation in the north and center north. So it's very difficult to know what they are doing and if it has a positive effect or if it's efficient. And what we witness is that the number of attacks is still very high and that you have attacks almost now every day.
Can you kind of give some background into the danger that of comparing them to ISIS, for example?
First of all, you have an increasing number of active groups, armed groups. So, well, you have the three big ones. First one is born in Burkina. It's called Ansarul al-Islam. And the two other big names are Islamic States, state in the Greater Sahara. And the last one is the Jenim that is linked to Al-Qaeda. But added to this, you need to know that there are smaller groups that are active in the north and in the east. Are all those groups ideologically and dogmatically Islamist? Perhaps, but you have many other reasons for their members to get involved in those groups. Some of them are coming from criminal gangs. Others are, reacting to social motivation.
That was Renaldo Depin, International Crisis Group's West Africa Project Director. He was speaking to Ricky Stryake from Dakar. 2 out of every 10 women in Kenya are suffering from endometriosis, according to Dr. John Okech, a gynecologist. Endometriosis is an often painful disorder in which tissue that normally lines the inside of the uterus grows outside the uterus. Dr. Okech says most women often ignore the severe pain they suffer during their menstrual cycle, thereby leading to barrenness. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Endometriosis is a medical condition that occurs when the lining of the uterus, called endometrium, grows in other places such as the fallopian tubes, ovaries, or along the pelvis. According to Dr. John Ongech, a gynecologist, at least 2 women out of 20 in Kenya are suffering from the condition. Ongech says the real cause of the condition.
There are many theories of what causes endometriosis. Some people think that it could be menstrual flow instead of coming out goes backwards, and that would cause endometriosis. Some people think it's just the tissues which are out there, which start to develop and turn to look like the lining of the uterus. So there are a lot of theories of really what may happen, but nobody knows the cause.
Endometriosis affects 3 to 10% of women of reproductive age and 25 to 50 of infertile women. It affects about 40 to 80% of women suffering from pelvic pain. Zuleha Akinyi, a 32-year-old renowned comedian and actress in Kenya who underwent a surgery a few weeks ago, says she realized she was suffering from the condition in the year 2017 but ignored it since the doctor said it was normal for women to endure pain during menstruation period.
They removed everything because I was suffering from fibroids and endometriosis. They even cut off my umbilical cord. Right now, I'm doing good. In fact, I had my last periods 2 weeks ago, and it was a smooth ride.
A mother of one now may never have a chance to conceive again since her uterus was ruptured during the surgery, and she is yet to undergo another test to either have her uterus removed. Zuleha advises fellow women to undergo frequent checkups in case of any pain to avoid the condition that seemed to have taken course in the country.
While trying to remove the fibroids, there was one which had already became part of me, so it had veins, it had blood. So when they were trying to pull that one out, they ruptured the uterus. So currently I'm going to have problems conceiving a baby.
Endometriosis has no cure, and it has stages that can be managed if discovered early enough. Dr. John Ongech warns that in most cases, the condition makes women barren.
It can cause a lot of additions in the pelvic cavity. You get a frozen pelvis, and the commonest problem is inability to conceive.
According to World Health Organization, WHO, the prevalence of endometriosis is higher than that of breast cancer and diabetes, and approximately 70 million women are diagnosed with endometriosis globally. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir has reportedly been charged for killing anti-government protesters. The Office of Sudan's Prosecutor General said in a statement on Monday that Bashir and others have been charged for inciting and participating in the killing of demonstrators. That's it for this Tuesday, May 14th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good day.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.